podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
We all take on different roles every day. One minute you're a parent, the next a chef, or a driver. That's why the Volvo XC40 Recharge is designed to be as versatile as you are. It's fully electric and includes a 360-degree camera, Google built-in, and more. Contact your local retailer to learn more or visit volvocars.com/US. The Volvo XC40 Recharge, for every you. Some equipment optional. Google is a trademark of Google LLC.
I hope this is working and you can hear me. This is a Twitter Space live reaction to Roy Hodgson being confirmed Palace manager, aka the worst kept secret in football, which Palace have just announced 20 minutes ago. I was trying to get my microphone to work, which is why I waited a little bit. So I hope I'm coming through loud enough and clear. I don't know if it's the right microphone, but we'll see. We'll get there. That's what Twitter Spaces are about. Essentially, me getting tech wrong. We're going to hear from some FYP people in their reaction to this news. And if you are in the space now, I think there's a tweet that you can reply to, I believe, to let us know what you think about the reaction. I can see one from Alex Achini who says, no Roy slander. Well, Alex, we'll try our best. No, I think it's going to be fairly positive. Let me try and invite... I can see Dominic Fifield is in the chat. I'll invite him in and we'll just get some reaction to Roy being confirmed this season. 1 year deal for Roy. Paddy as his assistant. Obviously, Ray Lewington as well. And Dean Kiley. So pretty much the same team that was here last season. So let me see if I can get people involved in the chat. Reply to that tweet. Let us know what you think. Are you happy? Are you relieved it's done? Are you disappointed? Let us know what you think about Roy being confirmed Palace manager. We will hear from some FYP people. We will probably do another pod later on in the week. Who knows? At least we actually got something to talk about now. Because we were trying to think about what pods to do, and there's been literally no updates. So at least we've got something to talk about now. Let me see who else I can get into the chat. Dominic, I've invited you. You're not confirmed, leaving me on red, which is very rude indeed. Who else can we get into the chat to talk about Roy? Otherwise, it's just me, and I think people are going to get bored of my voice. Let's look at some of the tweets, see what people are saying. Michael Dunn, I think the number one question is whether there's a transfer budget for him to work with. Excellent question, Michael, and we will put that to FYP people as soon as I can work out how to invite them into the call. But that's an excellent question, and I think that is probably the question that everybody is thinking about at the moment. This is like your granddad trying to do technology, because I can't see where to invite people. Oh, it says Dom, speaker.
I think I'm Dominic, in now. I think I'm in.
Oh, it's here. Thank God for that. It's embarrassing. I didn't think I was that old, but I'm really struggling with technology. How are you doing, mate?
I'm the one that's that old, and I'm the one that was struggling to get in. All is fine. All is fine. We finally have the confirmation that we've been expecting for weeks, really, haven't we?
Yeah, I mean, as I said at the start, it's like the worst-kept secret in football. Do we know why Palace have delayed it? I know sometimes it can be, like, boring logistics, and he's lost me. This is going swimmingly. I still hear Dom. No, he's lost me. This is great. This is what happens on live. It sounds like Dominic is making some lunch there of some sort, or is that walking, maybe? I wonder where he is. It's like Challenge Annika. Oh, he's muted himself. Let's see who else we can get in the chat while Dom works out the tech. Dom, are you still there? He's gone. Brackers is here. I'm going to invite Brackers to chat. He's young. He knows how technology works. So let's see if he can join the chat and give us a young person's point of view. Hello, Dom. Can someone check on Dom Fifield, please? I feel like he might be getting mugged or abducted right now, and all we're hearing is the effect of that. So I hope he's okay. Can someone please confirm that? Let's see who else we can get in. Ah, Ruben's here. He's young. He knows tech. Let's see if I can get him to talk, and will it work? Let's see. It says speaker.
Hello.
Ruben. Hello.
How are we doing?
How you doing?
Yeah, good, man. Yeah, relieved more than anything. What about you?
Probably the same. Do you know what? No one ever asked me. Thank you. That's very nice. I think relieved is probably the word. I think more, I feel like now we can sort of crack on.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, now's the time to, like, crack on with it. And actually, Michael, one of our listeners, put a question on Twitter. Transfer budget. That's the next question I think people are sort of now wondering about. Right, we've got the team, the managerial team in place. The next thing is surely transfers and strengthening the squad.
Yeah, absolutely. When I say relieved, I kind of, yeah, also mean in the sense that we have a manager and, you know, it's not a huge risk. Like, there's no chance of us being burnt again like we were in 2017 with De Boer, because there weren't really any obvious standout candidates that I was desperate for. So I'm quite happy for this to continue for a year. Obviously, it means maybe there isn't a detailed long-term plan, but if you need a little bit of continuity before you can, like, while you build that plan, then fine. And, you know, as kind of has been reported, the players seem to love him, which seemed to be a big factor in their decision to keep him on. So, you know, a happy dressing room goes a long way. So, yeah, that's my Hodgson take. But, yeah, the transfer budget, yeah, it's interesting. It feels like we might need to sell in order to buy. And obviously we've spoken before about which of our young stars we'd rather keep and rather sell. And obviously I don't really want any of them to leave at the moment. But I mean, I have no idea what the transfer budget is. However, having said that, I am pleased with the signing of Lerma, because I think he'll fit right in to Schlupp's position very well.
Were there any other managers that you secretly wanted?
I wouldn't have minded Potter. Obviously, there's like a little bit of, like, if he was to be successful at Palace, then there's a little bit of Brighton needle there that's quite fun. I wasn't massively keen on Rodgers. Nothing personal, but, well, it is kind of personal. I don't know, his personality is a little bit, it irks me a bit, but, you know, not saying he's a bad person. But other than that, like, none of the names really felt realistic. The kind of, was it Adi Hütte? I didn't really know anything about him, so couldn't really offer an informed take. Not really, but I'd have been quite excited had Potter come. But,
The overriding thing for Potter for me was I just felt like it would have annoyed Brighton fans, which I think is obviously always a good sort of driving emotion. I wasn't massively convinced by. I think when you've got someone with the presence of Roy and you know he's going to steady the ship, it does make all the other candidates feel a little bit like, is this risky? And we've obviously been burned by De Boer. And I guess in a way with Vieira last season, although sort of less dramatically. Mm-hmm. And so actually, I think the appeal of Roy outweighs the, not disappointment, but the, what's the word I'm looking for? The lack of excitement,
yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, because the De Boer thing, we shouldn't put too much weight on it, because it's not like, it doesn't mean we should never hire like an expansive foreign coach again. Like, obviously we should definitely look at all different types of manager, depending on what they want to build. But there's an element of that kind of safety, which is in some people's minds maybe dull. But the football that we played at the back end of last season wasn't dull. So it's kind of, its optics are a little bit boring, but I think we'll continue to be entertained next season.
I think so as well. I mean, I think a lot of it comes down to, and I guess that's probably related to Michael's question, comes down to playing squad. Like we saw last year, or in the last, whatever it was, 2 or 3 months, given the players, Roy can get good football. He can get results. He can, you know, that was a really fun few weeks. So really, actually, the pressure's off him. The pressure's on the board and Steve to actually fill the squad with exciting players.
Yeah, I mean, people forget some of the 11s that Roy was having to field in his previous, like in his first stint at Palace around sort of the 2020 mark. Like, you know, I remember we had midfields of like Milivojevic, Kouyaté and MacArthur, all of whom were, you know, at their peaks, like good players in their own right. But that it was a very defensive three. And now, you know, you'd have one type of player in that mould, potentially two, as a kind of holding player with more attacking players in front of them. And he was kind of hamstrung by that. And you know, the age of the defenders, as I've said multiple times before, prevented us from playing, you know, pressing football on the front foot, which now we can do a lot more because of the mobility of the defenders and Doucouré in front of them. So he's proving a lot of people wrong. I had my doubts about kind of how we would play when he returned, but it seems like the morale boost that he gave the team when he arrived, you know, I mean, there's potential that that's a new manager bounce and it might go stale at some point in the coming season. But it goes to show the power of managing people rather than being a tactical genius, because he didn't actually change anything that drastically tactically. It was we just played with more confidence, which meant that it led to more chances, and we didn't go 3 games without a shot on target, and we were actually scoring goals. But like in terms of like shape and general idea, like it wasn't that far removed from what we were doing previously under Vieira.
I really liked the interview that Eze did before his England debut, and he talked so heartfelt about Roy. And I love the bit he said, look, Roy, he said something like, Roy treats us like adults or something, or talks to us like adults or like grown-ups or something, which I wondered if was a slight, possibly on the previous manager. But I just like that. You can imagine that Roy, the respect that not only he commands, but he sort of gives it out. And I guess in football, it's both ways. If you give it out, you're going to get it back from your players.
Yeah, absolutely. Like the young players, I suppose the young players in the team at the moment, like, you know, Eze and Elise and Gehi, they will see what the relationship that Wilf has with, that Roy has with Wilfried Zaha, for example. And the way that Wilf shone under Roy in sort of, you know, 17, 18, 18, 19, those seasons. And so they'll see that that had happened and, you know, hopefully be given confidence that he can do similar with them. I'm not giving Roy too much credit for Wilf's development, but he really was our, like, as he always is, but he was really good under Roy in the first stint. And yeah, he just seems like a nice man, you know, who treats people with respect, and he's not like an authoritarian, which can be, you know, like how Jose Mourinho, like some players will fully buy into it and some players will completely go off him, and then it kind of brews this tension, which you don't want. So yeah, I mean, In a similar way to like what Harry Redknapp was back, you know, in his prime when he was, you know, at Spurs, let's say. Like we spoke to Peter Crouch about this recently, actually, just going to weave in a plug for my own work here. me and Joe Devine on the TIFO podcast interviewed Crouch, and Redknapp came up and he was essentially saying, yeah, he simplified everybody's game and he gave me confidence because he just... that's what you need for strikers especially. And, you know, while a lot of people doubted Crouch at the time, Redknapp built his confidence back up, and then eventually he got, you know, in the England team and moved to Liverpool. So I feel like Roy has a similar effect on players, probably tactically a bit more sophisticated, and he stayed up with the times more than Redknapp did. But it's a similar kind of arm around the shoulder approach.
I think that old sort of that Mourinho style of basically sort of hammering your players into the ground mentally and physically, I think that's died, isn't it? I think players want more now from their managers.
Yeah,
sure. I think that's dinosaur approach has sort of come and gone.
Yeah, I mean, you rarely see it work nowadays. You rarely even see it at all. Like the managers at the very top of the game are basically always glowing about their players in public, and privately they'll, you know, they'll maybe hand them it after a defeat, but it's never like publicly hanging them out to dry, you know, as Mourinho did with Shaw a lot, or whatever. And yeah, and young players, like, you know, I'm 27, so this generation of people, let alone, like, not just athletes, but like, we have different expectations of how we're treated by peers and bosses and stuff, and I feel like that applies to normal jobs as it does to football. So yeah, and Roy, to his credit, has, you know, he's still managing the Premier League at 75 because he is such a good people person. Like, I think that's probably the driving factor behind his longevity.
I thought you said buses for a second. I was like, why are you talking about buses? But you meant bosses.
Buses.
That's my that's my earphones. Let's get someone else in. Andy Bell. Andy, are you there? Can you unmute yourself?
Jim.
Hello. Hello. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. How are you? How are you feeling this morning? With the news. I mean, you can give us a life insight if you want, but specifically Roy Hodgson.
I'm very excited, if I'm honest. I think this was the right move from the club. I know that's probably going to be unpopular and people will say it's a lack of ambition. But I think given who was available, given that the club had probably spoken to a number of candidates, I think this is the right move. I think they're probably waiting in the wings for another manager that has a job in the Premier League currently. And I think in the absence of anyone else, I think Roy's a really good choice. I think it's really interesting to see his quotes this morning as well, saying he's aiming for a top 10 finish. I think that shows where he's at the moment.
Yeah, I can. Michael's put, I hope Roy doesn't manage Palace the same way Jim is managing Twitter Spaces. Yes, thank you, Michael. I think everyone can agree with that.
Harsh.
That's probably fair, given it's been a bit of a shambles for me tech-wise. Yeah, I saw those quotes. And in fact, Chris Waters, a.k.a. Clapham Grand, has tweeted us saying the fact they've simply, they publicly stated ambition of top half finish, they have to back him. They have the board have actually sort of backed themselves into a corner now, haven't they? By putting those quotes out, and I saw those Roy quotes as well about the top 10, that means that they are going to have, they're going to be having some investment, because we know how hard it is to hit the top 10 in the Premier League.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think as well, this just shows from the club, like the club know and Parrish know how important league experience is. And outside of maybe Potter, who obviously hasn't happened, or Brendan Rodgers, who was available that had that kind of that level of league experience. So, I think this is a solid move from the club.
Do you know what? I'm absolutely smashing the tech now because I've managed to get Dom and Joe, I think, in. I am trying to add Rob, but I can't find him. So apologies, Rob. I'm going to keep trying. Let's go to Dom and see if Dom's tech is working. I'm guessing this means, Dom, you weren't abducted. It did sound like you were being mugged earlier, but I'm guessing you're all okay.
Can you hear me now? I've recovered from the mugging.
You sound great. You sound fantastic.
It wasn't out. No, it was out. It was out. Sorry, what were we talking about? Yeah. yes, right. Yeah, Chris's point there. We have to back him. Do you not think there's an argument that the board maybe thought that the squad that Palace had already is a top 10 squad anyway, and that actually this isn't necessarily a sign that that the new manager is going to have a lot of money to play with in the transfer market and a lot of new players? I think it might be just to get the best out of the existing squad. And there's still obviously one big question mark around Palace at the moment, and that is the future of Wilfred Zaha and whether he will be reporting back once he finishes celebrating his wedding, which I think took place this weekend, and whether he comes back into the squad and into availability for Palace for the season ahead. But obviously, if he goes, then they would need to fill that void that he left behind. And they also know that Michael Olise is out for a period of time with a very serious hamstring injury. But I do wonder whether the logic behind the appointment of Roy Hodgson again is merely to get the best out of the players that Palace already have.
There's a question on that from Alex Cheney, who says, do you think Roy's appointment makes Wilf more or less likely to re-sign?
It's a really good question. And I suppose in the brief appearances that we saw from Wilfred Zaha at the end of last season under Roy, he did look reinvigorated and happier, although albeit he had a lot of injury issues and didn't really have the impact he would have liked in that 10 game stretch. My instinct would be that it might make it slightly more likely, but then I do think that Wilfried Zaha is at a point in his career where he might just need a fresh start, something different, and it really will depend on the other offers he's got on the table, probably more than the identity of the Crystal Palace manager. So that ball's very much in Wolf's court, and he has to make a decision at some point. I do wonder whether Palace need to actually put a deadline down and say, look, at this point, Wolf, we're going to move on, and we're going to assume that you're not re-signing with us, and we're going to go out and strengthen and try and bring someone else in who's going to go some way towards filling the void that you'll leave, because I don't think Palace can't afford to let this drag on and on and on. The players are back for pre-season today, aren't they, some of them? So I mean, it's a situation that needs resolution.
Although, I mean, technically he's not a Palace player right now, I don't think. So if they do sign him, then as some said on Twitter, that's like a new signing. So there you go, being back to the transfer market. Let's get Joe Walker, I've managed to add in. I have added Rob. I found Rob. So we'll get someone to Rob in a minute, unless Joe is busy. I think he was grabbing lunch. Joe, are you there?
I am here. I've successfully slipped out of a web meeting. So to join a more
thank you. One. Yes, I appreciate the commitment. We know where FYP ranks in your commitments, and it's clearly number one. How are you feeling? What's your reaction to Roy, the confirmation?
Not surprised. I think the longer it went on, you felt like it's actually kind of, you could see parallels in the Wolf situation, actually, but more so in the other direction. I feel like the longer it went on without an announcement, I thought the more likely it would be Roy. I could see that we obviously tried to consider some options out there, but I'd long accepted that Roy would come in, and I'm immediately kind of, the anxiety of kind of looking over our shoulder is gone because I can trust him for that. I'm trying to avoid the comfy shoes analogies and all the metaphors again, but it's in a positive way. I'm good with that. I'm with Dom in that the top 10 ambitions, I'm happy to hear said publicly. I don't know if it's reflective of how the club's ambitions to really support him this summer to get that happen. I imagine they're of the thinking that this squad in place is supposed to be competing for the top half. It was probably an ambition that we outlined, if not publicly, then privately this time last season. So I'm not sure of that. And I don't know what difference it makes for Wilf now. I really don't. I'm the optimist. I assume he's gone, but the optimist in me is looking at, you know, he's let him have his wedding. I presume there's a honeymoon in the next week or so. And if he says, let me make up my mind in a week's time or 2 weeks' time even, whether we are willing to wait that long, we'll see. Another thing about him being a free agent technically is if we re-sign him now, if he renews or just signs a new deal with us, does that expire any kind of sell-on? I know that we probably wouldn't sell him for much money now anyway. Oh. All these kind of sell-on fees that we were probably due to Manchester United or percentages, that's all out the window now, I suppose.
That's a great question. If any of our panellists know, feel free to jump in, because I have no idea, but that's a very, very good question indeed. I suspect if he's signing a new deal at Palace now, the odds of him then going on to another club for any sort of profit are probably quite low.
Yeah.
But that's a good question. Let's get Robin who's got a secret new Twitter account. Rob, are you there? Can you unmute yourself?
And yeah, join? It's hello. Really secret. You can see by the username that it's very secret. I had to go through one of those weird questions where it basically tried to tell me to add up dice to the sum of 14. And my basic maths really struggled with that concept. So sorry about that. I think it's the appointment we all knew was going to happen, wasn't it? You know, we all had a feeling that was going to be the case. There was some talk about Paulo Fonseca, which would have been really interesting. I think the idea of having a foreign manager in many ways and someone who's worked for some big clubs abroad, it does seem like an attractive option. And I think Potter as well would have been good. But I kind of feel like they would have looked at the performances when Roy came in and would have said, well, why are we throwing out this when we could actually just have it without having to spend, you know, money for essentially paying compensation to Lille or whichever club it is that you get the manager from, removing all of your coaching staff or the ones that the manager would want to work with and appointing a new bunch, only with the risk of doing what Spurs did, which is appoint Nuno and end up sacking him just a few months later and spending a fortune on doing that. I think it's one of those things where they probably just weighed everything up on balance and decided that Roy as a manager with Paddy McCarthy kind of working in the background and learning on the job, someone that they really do rate really highly, was probably a more positive step. So it is interesting to talk about top 10 finish. I think Dom made a really good point about the fact that this squad, the argument would be that actually we've got enough quality in that team to do that. And had it not been for that 17 game run of no wins and the number of games where we didn't even get a shot on target, we may well have finished in the top 10. And so I do wonder, with Palace fans, we have a tendency to be quite overly pessimistic about the players that we have and the squad that we have. And I understand the fear about the fullbacks, and you know, the lack of a right back signing is problematic perhaps, but I think Roy actually showed that actually Joel Ward and Nathaniel Clyne are perfectly adept at doing that job for the time being, and the focus is clearly going to be on if they are going to make a signing, it will be a striker potentially, and spending a significant sum of money on that. But yeah, the whole Wilfried Zaha situation is an interesting one, because I feel like I'm conflicted, because I want him to sign a new contract, and I think he deserves a move to a bigger club. But if he ends up rocking up at someone like West Ham, West Ham are a bigger club than Crystal Palace, without a doubt. But I would feel a little bit cheated. I'd feel a little bit disappointed. And in the thought of seeing him at Selhurst Park wearing another team's gear, well, it makes me feel a bit uncomfortable. But hopefully he'll sign a new contract. And if he doesn't, then, you know, I think he goes with our best wishes, unless he ends up at somewhere like Brighton, which, let's be honest, he's not going to do that.
Oh, I mean, I can't believe you said West Ham are bigger club than Palace in a public forum.
They play in a 70,000 capacity stadium. They just won a European competition. Palace are nowhere near.
So we hope.
Not yet.
Well, anyway, really quick, we're gonna break in a minute, because Zane's going to get some lunch. We might jump on later on this afternoon and do a part two. I know Jack wants to join in later on. Really quick update from Ruben. I was going to ask him what he got for lunch. Tuna sandwich and Grace. So solid lunch there. Andy, let's come back to you really quickly, because a few people are asking about Paddy McCarthy, who's obviously part of the team. Jack, I said Paddy to train up for Roy to train Paddy for next year. Nick Philpott, does the appointment pave the way for Paddy next year? And Michael Dunn, is Paddy a succession plan? And in the hope the succession plan isn't akin to the Logan Roy family, which is a lovely little nod to succession, but I am actually finally watching it. It's very good. What are your thoughts on Paddy?
I think it's a really nice kind of romantic idea, but I think, in honesty, I think it's really unrealistic. I think, given how hard it is to manage in the Premier League, given that he has no other experience, I just think it's so unlikely. And if you look at the club's track record in hiring and firing managers, you know, Steve has often gone out there, if you look at De Boer or, you know, even Vieira, he's taken chances, but he's always reverted back to that league experience and how important it is. So I think it's great for Paddy. I think it's great for the club that someone's involved that loves the club and understands it and understands the fans. And also, you know, goes back to that promotion squad and how important that was and still is to the club. But I think to think that we get to the end of this season, Roy bows out, Paddy takes over the reins and everything is rosy is pretty unrealistic, to be honest with you. I think it's great for the club right now, but I can't see it being the future, in my opinion.
I guess let's bring Dom back in. I guess it's a fair point from Andy, especially about the experience. I guess managers have to get experience somewhere, so Paddy has to get it at some point, maybe not in the Premier League. But what are your thoughts on him? I guess being part of the team or maybe part of a succession plan.
No, I completely agree with Andy. I think that at some point Paddy McCarthy will probably fly the nest and go and learn management, senior management, first team management at a League One or a Championship club. But he'll go with a wealth of experience that he's picked up from Roy Hodgson in the 10 games at the end of last season and the season ahead. I think he'll be well armed with that experience. But I don't think you really go from that sort of academy assistant manager route into a first team management head coach role at a Premier League club of Palace's size. Look, there will be examples out there where it has happened and it's worked. But I think that the risk and reward at Palace is just too great. It's, you know, relegation would have major implications for Palace, and I don't think they would want to put somebody with that level of experience in that type of position. But look, at giving him a schooling under Roy and learning from somebody that's been in the game since the mid-70s as a first team manager, that's completely invaluable.
Yeah, he would, of course, be the first FYP panellist to get the Palace manager's job, if that happens, until, of course, Selsey gets the nod. So it'd be pretty big.
Did Keith Millen not ever come on your...
Oh, yeah, Keith Millen, yeah. Yeah. Caretaker, though, isn't it? Same for Paddy last time. But no, you're right. Poor old Keith, I always forget about Keith. Guys, we're going to take a quick break here. Well, I say quick break. We're going to end this live because I need to go and have some lunch. We might jump on later on as a little part two, and then we'll put this out as a podcast so people can listen. Just quickly going through the tweets of people that have sent us stuff. Everyone seems, much like our panellists today, pretty sort of relaxed, nonplussed, appreciated short term. So everyone's seeming pretty relaxed for once. I haven't properly delved into Twitter, so I imagine there's some sections that aren't like that, but it's nice to see everyone sort of fairly relaxed about stuff. So pretty rare for Twitter, but there we go. Thank you very much for listening to this space. We'll be back on this afternoon with the part two. But until then, enjoy your lunches, whatever you're having, and we'll see you again soon. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote.com. That's SelectQuote.com.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Full details on example policies at SelectQuote.com/commercials.
Hey, it's Jesse Kelly. We are, for the most part, a reactionary society. If your neighbor has a break-in, you think about getting an alarm. If your buddy gets laid off, you say, I better buckle down at work. If banks start closing, you may want to ask yourself if you should keep most or all of your money in a bank. It may be time for a portfolio protection plan. It may be time to have a little personal gold reserve.
Go to www.oxfordgoldgroup.com to learn more.
When it comes to business travel in Orlando, it's never business as usual. Oh, sure, I could go on for days about all the incredible places to hold meetings, or the Michelin dining, or the innovative industries that'll make you feel right at home. But Dr. Michael Edwards of Ocean Insight said it best. Orlando is as much a business capital as an entertainment one. So dive in and see what's happening in Orlando, where the possibilities for business travel are unbelievably real. Learn more at OrlandoForBusiness.com.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote.com. That's SelectQuote.com.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Full details on example policies at SelectQuote.com/commercials.
Hello. Yes, it's working. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to this evening record. It's 7:15 on Monday night. The second part of our Twitter space reactions to Roy Hodgson returning as manager for another crack at the whip. It's been, 7 hours now since the news has happened, so a bit more time to digest. So this will be a slightly more, much like our weekly pod, a bit more of a, a bit more of a relaxed review of it, maybe. Who knows? We're, again, going to have some FYP people. Jack Pearce is here, I think, and has joined us. I'm going to invite him again to speak and give us his thoughts. And then if you go look on Twitter, I think you can reply to the tweet that I've just sent out to this and let us know what you think as well, and then we can read your tweets out, and that's about as live as it gets. Jack, hello, how are you?
Fine. Are you having more success than you did at lunchtime?
Just about. don't jinx it. I mean, it's a good start so far, but let's not jinx the tech. How are you? Well, we got everyone else's reaction this morning to Roy coming back. What was your reaction to hearing the news that it was actually confirmed?
Well, given that we all thought it was kind of a done deal, it was a bit kind of underwhelming, but good to have it announced and good to see pictures of him in the training gear this afternoon. So he's back at the training ground and the players have got some degree of direction. And I think it might be a couple of days earlier than Patrick Vieira's appointment a couple of years ago. So the club have at least managed to be a little bit earlier than that. But yeah, we've all known this is happening for at least the last week. And a lot of Palace fans suspect it's going to be the case since the end of last season, given how the season ended. So I'm relatively relaxed about it. I've been relatively relaxed about the prospect of Roy coming back since Roy returned and saw the uplift in our form anyway. So it's just now a case of kind of doing what they need to do to the squad, because that squad's got big gaps. So intrigued to see what happens between now and the start of the season.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about the timing of the Vieira one. So there, listen, this club's just going up and up and up, learning from past mistakes and absolutely smashing it. I will say that training gear that you mentioned, very nice. Nice training gear. So yeah, I like it. I think it's...
Are you not a fan? You're a sucker for training gear.
I am. I'll be buying it off Vinted in 18 months' time for £15. I can't wait. It's interesting. As you're talking, I was just thinking about... so I've had a lot of time to think about my reaction to Roy. And in fact, I was a bit... because I knew it was happening. And I guess we had a bit of those feelers sent out in the press a couple of weeks ago, didn't we, in last week. And then I think in a way we all... there was no shock to it, no surprise. We all sort of knew it was going to happen. And it's quite rare for a managerial appointment to be like that. Oh, someone's ringing me. Sorry, I'm just going to decline it. Incredible timing. For a summer appointment to be like that, because normally in the summer, I'm not sure the last time we really had it, because you get a manager comes in and it's normally a new manager, and then you get the week or so of, a bit of a buzz of new manager and what does he play like? And, you know, we might get fans on the pod from his previous clubs and, what can we expect and what's he like around the training ground?
Who's called you just declined was president of the Malmo Fan Association, so you should have held on.
it's a slightly different one, isn't it, given that we've sort of been here before. So there's none of that. It's almost a sort of a quick raised eyebrow and sort of, okay, crack on.
I don't even know if it's a raised eyebrow, to be honest. It's quite good that he had that time with the players that he hadn't seen in his previous tenure. So there's very little to surprise him in terms of the playing staff, and he can kind of contribute ideas. Obviously, recruitment is led by someone else, and Dougie will be doing what he's doing in the background. Already secured a very good free transfer in Jefferson Lerma. So I guess it'll be a case over the next week or so, players starting to drip back into the first team. The question of whether Wilfred Zaha will ever return as a kind of paid up player at the club rather than somebody who uses the facilities as he's looked like for the last couple of weeks. So, yeah, lots of things for Roy to kind of get to grips with, but we can trust that he will get to grips with them and will be competitive from the first day of the season, albeit acknowledging that squad certainly needs some more additions.
Yeah, when I had that phone call come in just now, it knocked my earpods off. So now I'm coming through the main speaker. So yet again,
now than you did.
I'm having. Do I?
Yeah, so Mr. Mallow's fault. Well, yeah, it's all good.
I'm having tech issues again. I just can't deal with this modern technology.
How long would a podcast be if we listened to 10, 15 minutes from a fan from every club that Roy's been at previously? It'd be good to get the Watford perspective. That'd be fun.
Yeah, I think that'd be quite short, wouldn't it? I think that'd be quite short-lived perspective. How many clubs has he managed?
God knows. It's too late.
He's managing 8 countries.
Yeah, I would guess 14 or 15 clubs would be my guess. Maybe too bad. Might be too many, actually, given his international credentials, but probably double digits in terms of clubs for sure.
Which club do you think of his post-clubs have given him the best? We know Watford are going to give him the worst review. Which of the other clubs are giving him the best, if we got a fan on, give him the best review?
It's got to be Hampstead or Malmo, you'd imagine, wouldn't it? You would think.
Yeah, they're going to be some really old Swedish dudes.
That's the summer content, and everyone's listening out for that. That's exactly what we need to get listeners listening to. Just some old Swedish guys talking about the '70s.
Oh man, what a time! I named this space. Joe's here. I'm going to invite Joe in as well. I named this space What's Next? You know, Roy's back, what's next? Because I think that is kind of, even the vibe this morning, that was kind of just where everyone's mind seemed to be. And I guess because we knew it was happening. And because Roy, the managerial spot was one of many sort of boxes that need to be ticked, or, you know, forms that need to be filled out. These are bad analogies, but, or things that need to be sorted. So I think really, there is no honeymoon period. There is no chance for us to be like, oh, you know, Roy's back, or even what can we look forward to? We know what to look forward to. Really, it's a chance now for us to, off the club. And Dom made the really good point, or maybe it's Dom and Andy, or Andy, I can't remember, that by saying the we want to get top 10, the club have now given themselves not just a target. I saw someone put on Twitter that it's great to have ambition, but they've slightly now given themselves a failable target. Because if they now don't get top 10 next season, is that kind of a failure?
Don't you think they have to? Surely they have to say something along those lines. I mean, if they didn't say anything, then we'd all be accusing them of saying nothing. And if they said anything other than not a top half finish, we'd all be saying, "Isn't it ridiculous? They're not aiming for a top half finish." I mean, the truth is, we weren't that far off it in terms of league position last year. You know, we finished 11th, so it is within reach. It just requires, you know, sustaining the approach in terms of the transfer market, maybe holding our nerve in terms of, you know, holding on to saleable assets, depending on the value of offers made for certain players. Mark Gaye, Ebricha, as a less so Michael Olise, given that he's injured now. And then probably what happens with Wilfred Zaha and what we do with that money if we don't have to spend it on Wilf's wages. So, you know, there are some dependables in that, but I think a top half finish is certainly achievable. I don't think they've said anything particularly outlandish. Had we finished 17th like Everton last season and survived on the last day of the season, I think it would be pure speculation from the board's part and probably a little bit of faux truth to it if they said, oh, we're aiming for a top half finish. But I think having finished 11th last year, it's an achievable target. I mean, you're literally asking to finish one place higher and most likely only collect 3 to 4 points more than you did last season to have a tangible chance of reaching that.
Yeah, I mean, the irony being Everton fans probably will be demanding top 10 this season.
They'll be lucky if they put 10 players on the pitch next season.
Yeah, well, quite. Shows the world we're doing. We're not in that kind of mess. Joe, let's get you back in if you're available to unmute yourself. Any change from your mood from this morning?
Not really. I'm kind of, there's no like bells or whistles. There's no frills to it really, is there? But if anything, I mean, look, I remember being really kind of anxious at Vieira's appointment being, I think, like the 1st or 2nd of July as well. And that feeling like it was really late. And yes, there were extenuating factors with various managers turning us down or backing out of deals at that time before we settled on Vieira. But it still felt very late that he sort of barely got his feet under the table and pre-season was underway. Whereas with Roy, I imagine the report suggested that he agreed this before he went on holiday and it was just about an official unveiling. But I guess when it's someone who's already been working with them prior to the break, then it's that kind of late appointment doesn't feel quite as bad. I'll tell you one thing. Apology for covering old tracks. Because I missed the start of the last sort of space. Did you cover... obviously, Paddy McCarthy's assistant, there's suggestions of getting his education sort of increased and accelerated, possible succession planning. But does it also possibly point to Ray Lewington kind of maybe wanting to do a little bit less work? You know, his vocal cords are going a bit. He can't die out of scream as often.
We did cover that, but that didn't come up, actually. And I hadn't appreciated until after the space when I then read the website that, yeah, Paddy is assistant and Ray is first team coach.
Yeah.
Or something.
And Ray's got a sort of a good few years of Roy, but even so, I imagine, they seem to come as a pair, but he might be thinking, God, really? Again? I don't know.
Well, it'd be weird, Jack, wouldn't it, seeing one without the other?
Yeah. I think it might just be semantics, and it may be a little note to Paddy McCarthy that he's an important part of what we did well towards the end of last season. And who, I've always been a bit sceptical about this notion of succession planning. I think, you know, Joe and I have discussed this with you on the pod, the idea that a club in our position can plan that far ahead. I mean, it's only 3 or 4 months ago that, you know, we were hoping that Patrick Vieira would be steering us into this season, and very quickly we had to make the decision that we made regarding his future. So I think for the club to be in a position where we're planning 12 months ahead to, you know, pass the mantle on to Paddy McCarthy is maybe for the birds, but we'll see where we are in 12 months' time. But he's certainly going to get a wonderful education, and, you know, if he is kind of learning from not only Roy Hodgson, a man who's got an unbelievable CV in terms of management across the continent, across the world, you know, in terms of coaching, Ray Lewington is a very good person to be learning from. Again, a man who, in his latter part of his career, has learned directly next to Roy. But, you know, he's built his own career himself. So it's a really great education for Paddy. And whether it's Palace who benefit from it, or perhaps maybe more likely a Championship or a League One club in the next couple of years, then they'll be well served by that experience and the apprenticeship that Paddy's doing right now. I think it's really important also that Dean Kiely has been maintained as well. Clearly it's almost like a separate department. We've heard Selzy talk about that in previous pods and previous seasons, but the goalkeeper department is almost a separate department entirely. So for Dean Kiely to continue working with goalkeepers that he's been working with for a number of years now, and Sam Johnson just for the last one, but it's very important that there's that continuity as well. So I think in terms of a coaching staff, it's very well set, very well balanced, clearly very well experienced, and maybe Paddy is the one that brings that kind of greater youth and energy that the cohort probably benefit from.
I'm back on the headphones now, so I'm going to sound bad again. Don't ask me what's happening. My Twitter's got its mind of its own. There's a couple of articles on the Palace website, and one of them is about Roy's journey, I guess, and I think it's called like Roy Hodgson, One of Our Own or something, and about him sort of going full circle from watching Palace on the terraces as a teenager and stuff. And you were just talking there about sort of like, you know, Roy's experience, and it details like him in Sweden and him in Switzerland and him with Blackburn and him taking Fulham to Europa League final. And then there's one sentence where it goes, and then he managed Liverpool and West Brom. So anyway, and then he got the England job, and they took on Palace, completely skirted over that.
I know West Brom fans who hold him in as much high regard as we do, so that's a bit unfair to his time at West Brom. But yeah, certainly his time at Liverpool probably best served with just one sentence.
Yeah. I've got a question. Joe, I'll come to you for this question. We've had a couple of people tweet us. Jack H.
Hey, Jack H.
Says he'll go back. Hello, Jack H. Sorry. He'll go back to his cautious ways, I'm afraid. I'm not sure there's anything from the last goal that was cautious.
No, I mean, I guess now he knows he's here for a more prolonged period of time. He may be more inclined to be like, okay, look, here's some things I think we need to work on. There might be some things he wants to play into. But what I thought that last spell showed, and hopefully it's something that Roy's kept in, is that, you know, actually with better players, he has different approaches, and he's kind of just playing it as it lies in terms of what he's got in front of him, and mixing metaphors there. But, you know what I mean? I feel like the first spell, towards the end, it was very much kind of a necessity, having to play some quite sort of slow, aging centre-backs, and then just suddenly this very explosive counter-attack style, really relying on kind of Townsend and Zaha to get away and hold up the ball, create something. Whereas I feel like we no longer have to do that now. Obviously, things are subject to change. If there's players, as well as Wilf, whether he goes or not, if a centre-half is sold, if somebody else is sold, who this backup for Elise is, if there is someone brought in, I still think it wouldn't be great enough to drastically change to a more kind of super pragmatic style. I just don't think it would make sense with those players, really. And I feel like even fans, well, you said Jack mentioned West Brom there, having a really good time there. He got the England job off the strength of that spell and had them sort of took over in the bottom three and took them comfortably mid, like sort of halfway up the table. I feel like they wouldn't say that he necessarily played negative football. A lot of the training, I remember that being a thing that came up a lot, was that his training can be quite repetitive, really kind of methodical and boring, but 10 weeks in, suddenly you realise everything that you were being told was being applied in the games in real time, and suddenly everyone's on board with it. But it's just about whether you're patient enough. Everyone's worked with him long enough now where maybe that's not really an issue.
Jim, come in.
Yeah.
Just a runner.
Yeah.
We'll take issues. So. I think I was just looking back at the final lineup of that 2020 season. So the kind of pandemic, just to kind of give a snapshot. Obviously, towards the end of his spell, we know about. But you know, even a year before he finished, his midfield two were James McArthur and James McCarthy, when he was playing in a kind of 4-4-2 system. And when he had those players at his disposal, you could understand why he was playing the way he was. But then, look forward to next season. He's, you know, going to start the season with a midfield three of Cech Decore, Jefferson Lerma, and Ebrich Eze. In terms of market value, you're probably looking at £120 million worth of player there. And I think that is probably the best argument that we can give, that he probably will play in a different way to what we saw towards the end of his spell in both 1920 and the 2021 season. Because he's got better players. I know it's so simple to say, but he's got better players who can play a more expansive style, who can get about the pitch a lot quicker and a lot more mobile. So I'm really excited to see what happens with that. And my only criticism of Roy in the 10-game spell that he had towards the end of the season came at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, when I just felt we kind of saw a return to Roy being the most respectful manager in the Premier League by almost just accepting a 1-0 defeat against a bigger, more, you know, high-profile opposition. And that was a criticism sometimes Lord kind of left at him in his first spell. And then that was the only kind of minor frustration I had in that 10-game spell. Obviously, the biggest concern for us was to get away from the relegation scrap, and we did. So it kind of paled into insignificance. But I just hope we don't, over a 38-game season, that obviously we will be playing, you know, more high-profile teams more regularly than Roy did in that 10-game spell, given that I think Spurs was the only kind of typical top 16 that we played in that 6 weeks. So I'm hopeful we don't see a too respectful Roy, and I just hope he throws caution to wind in that sense, albeit keeping us set up nicely and are on the front foot against teams. But, there's so many positives from that 10-game spell, no more so than the imperious form of Eberich Eze to the point where he, earned his England debut. So I'm really excited for August. I think the squad will be supplemented. I think everybody expects it to be. Obviously, there is the unknown about Wilf, who this evening has been rumoured to announce that he's agreed deals with four separate teams and four separate continents. So we'll see what happens with him. But we'll we've got an exciting start to the season. We've got some winnable games. We've got some tough games. But you know that Roy will have a set up, and hopefully the club do right by him and by us by supplementing an already decent squad with some additional talent.
Yeah, I was just trying to kind of think of other things that were different in this second kind of, well, this interim spell Roy had that kind of just proves that we've not got blinkers on. I'm thinking about even the subs. Do you remember that Roy would get pelters for his subs? And I feel like it wasn't a drastic change, but he was certainly a little bit more proactive in terms of his changes. I mean, the Leicester game's kind of an example of that, of Mateta getting on. Sometimes we wouldn't see a change in a game if we went behind until the second goal. We'd have to go two behind before a change was made. I feel like that, there isn't really much evidence of that this time around. Am I kind of rewriting history?
No, I think the subs is one area, and also look at his use of fullbacks. I think the average position of our fullbacks in that spell under Roy at the end of last season, you'd imagine the positioning of the fullbacks was completely different to where they were towards the end of Roy's first spell. That new Brazilian right-back that we've got, Wardinho, he's something else. And Tyree Mitchell had a bit of a rebirth under Roy and Ray too. So two good examples there, I think, in terms of like fullback and substitutions, which kind of indicate that if Roy has got kind of the facets to put us on the front foot and make us a better team, then he will do, and he won't be frightened to do so. The only concern I have about that is obviously we are quite light in kind of squad depth and that bench can sometimes look very, very weak. And I just hope we don't return to the days of people shouting for Brandon Pierre to make his debut simply because he's the only option we have on the bench. But time will tell. Obviously, the academy's in a stronger place anyway. So if any youngsters do make the step up from academy into the first team squad, then you'd imagine they're going to be a better bet than what we've had previous. But I think Roy will use his bench wisely. I always felt that with Roy's use of the bench, it was because of that's what he had available to him. I don't think it was a reluctance to make substitutions. I just sometimes think there weren't really the options to make the type of changes that he wanted to make. But I know that was a regular criticism. And when you're, 0-0 or 1-1 with 70 minutes gone, you want changes from the bench because that's the dynamic change you have available to you. And sometimes he was slower than most fans would have liked him to have been.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. I feel like the start of the season is often when it's really the bookends of seasons where you see some younger players maybe be in the mix a bit if they've had an impressive pre-season or a signing hasn't come in because we're trying to sort of hit the bargain bin close to deadline as possible. And I've seen quite a few just mentions now of, particularly with Elise's injury, whether that puts a pin on any kind of Draxaki loan move until further notice. I'm not someone that's clamming for him to get in the team. He's had an excellent loan spell. I think it's a huge jump. I like him. I just definitely want him around. And I'm really excited for where he's going to be in a year, let's say. But do I want him? Well, I guess this preseason is going to give him a huge opportunity. I guess then if we're focusing on things to maybe criticise Roy for, maybe in a previous spell, again, it was players like Brandon Pierrick, but playing youngsters at that time, given the lack of depth, wasn't that frequent. Although when someone was good enough, when it was an Aaron Wan-Bissaka, that was it. They were in the team until kind of they were sold. So I guess this time around, the different levels have been winning all kinds of trophies and tournaments and doing really well. I mean, I don't know if it's been discussed on the pod actually, that Jake O'Brien was reportedly the subject of like a £1 million bid from one of the French club, Trois, I think, who are in the Man City group. And I mean, when was the last time we had someone that's never played in the first team be sort of spoken about that kind of money?
It's the sort of talk that gets Steve Parrish very happy, that, Joe. So,
I bet.
But I mean, I think a lot will be told in towards the end of July, beginning of August, when Football League clubs are starting their competitive season, to see which Palace players have made that loan move. You mentioned Jez, who clearly had a wonderful season at Charlton last year, and you know, the ideal would be that he continues his development, maybe playing Championship football. And it was rumoured that a deal was pretty much agreed with Ipswich in terms of him going there and joining a very attacking team, which I think would obviously suit him, and he would be on the front foot getting a lot of the ball. So that would be ideal. I recall towards the end of last season, Selzy and Dom on a post-match pod. Sign up here if you're not a patron. But they were talking I think Everton, about you know maybe the approach with loans out would be just to maintain development of certain players. Killian Phillips is another one, had a really, really solid second half of the season with Shrewsbury, and the idea that he would maybe come back into the fold, again, might be a bit too early. Maybe a season-long loan in the Championship would serve him well. He's got a bit of a complicated contract situation, though. But if we are able to embed youngsters into the squad at the right time, then that's the ideal. And you don't really want them kind of being the plaster over holes in the squad if there are, you know, ways of supplementing the squad with players that are ready and fit, ready to go. I think one example that Roy got accused towards the end of last season of perhaps not managing as well as he could do was the Ahamada situation. And Ahamada had shown glimpses under Patrick Vieira of nice moments, and he could clearly, you know, play a bit and move the ball quite nicely. He looked good with the cameos that he made, but under Roy, I don't believe he made a single minute appearance. So that's a case in point, and that's an investment the club have made of over £10 million. So the jury will be out on Roy and his youth and his use of youngsters, because he, you know, didn't have the most effective use of them in his first spell. Albeit he did give Aaron Wan-Bissaka and Tyreek Mitchell their debuts, but I think with the better calibre of youngster that we have now, due to the kind of academy's evolution over the last 5 years or so, there will be more option for him to use. David Ozo is another one who made his Premier League debut last year. What do we do with him? Does he go and get a Championship loan move, or may he well be the kind of additional option in the middle of the park? But it's a great place to be if you've got starting to develop players, whether they're players like Jake O'Brien, who may well be moved on for money when he's never made a Premier League appearance or a first team appearance for us, that's great. Or whether you're able to start thinking about the development of these players with loan moves, or whether they come straight into the first team squad. Jack Wells Morrison is another one, had a very strong season last year. What does he do? But it's tough that step up. You know, you only got to look at someone like David Omalabu, who 2 or 3 years ago we were thinking he's going to be the next one to kind of step up into the first team, and he was released at the end of last season. So there's no guarantee with any of these youngsters, but you've got to trust the end game for players that have, you know, developed so much during the academy, is that the club do right by them at the end of their spell, whether that's moving them into the first team or whether they're kind of moved on elsewhere in the professional game.
Yeah, we can afford to be a bit more patient now because of the position we are as a club. Yeah. You know, I feel like there's some people, if they're not getting into the team now, we probably have to cut them loose a while back, whereas now you can give Joe Whitworth as much time as he needs, knowing that at the other end of 2 or 3 loan deals that he's going to be exactly where he needs to be as a professional or a potential professional, you know, beyond, you know, for the next however many years. I even thought about it, just on the side, we're getting a bit, I don't want to take it too much of in a different direction. I don't know if you saw today that Tom King, who is in our academy keeper, he's just signed for Wolves. And he didn't make the grade at Palace. I think we sold him to... I think we just released him at the end of his... At 18, and he went to Millwall. And he's sort of had a decade of league football. And it occurred to me that he was on the books at Palace the same time as Wes Fodderingham, who's...
Oh, right. Yeah.
Who also didn't play for Palace, went on loan to, like, Bromley, and then from there played at Swindon with Di Canio, Rangers.
Yeah.
Years at Rangers with... Warburton, and then
is it Sheffield United?
Is now at Sheffield United. Yeah. So there's a bunch of ex-Palace academy keepers in a league. Like, sometimes you just at that level, at the time where we were, we didn't have time to give sort of 18-year-old keepers like 5 years and hope that it kind of works out. Sometimes it's like, if you're not playing now, you've got to move on. And I feel like we're in a little bit better position.
Yeah, actually. I mean, the shout out another one of the Sells stable, Tom King. I think that's a great, you know, his journey back to Premier League football is. He's great, and you know, we'd encourage anyone who's suffered in the game to stick with it, and their time will come. Just shout out to Lance Cronin if he's listening. Hopefully one day your day will come as well, Lance, but maybe not. But yeah, it's great to have that. And I think the fact that we're talking about loan signings of the youth squad, it kind of just indicates on the day that a manager's been appointed, kind of just sums up how relatively underwhelming the appointment is. But it's because we also
how difficult it is to find any kind of real worry.
Yeah, well, exactly. Like, that's what I mean. It's we haven't got a litany of issues to discuss because we've talked the prospect of Roy's appointment to death towards the end of the last season. And now I think most Palace fans have just made their peace with it. And now we just need to get on with it and see what Roy in 23-24 looks like. And all the hope is he carries on with the good stuff from the end of last season and is able to kind of improve upon that, given the additions to the squad that we all hope are going to be coming. I guess the next stage of the summer discourse is whether or not those signings are made and whether the squad is supplemented to the need. But there's weeks and podcasts to come for that. And I think today we just need to kind of be relieved that the announcement's been made and that Roy is in place and we'll go from there. I mean, clearly Jim's so bored of the chat about But Roy, he's just disappeared and just left it to us, Joe.
I am here. The previous time I was talking to you, but I'd muted myself, which I think is the most boomer thing I've ever done in my life. So I apologise. But you guys, it was like just a minute. You guys just carried on absolutely flawlessly.
It's another reference I don't get.
Oh God! I just made it worse, haven't I? Sorry.
Farmer's question.
That was really interesting.
Is that what you're talking about?
It's like university challenge. No, come on, everyone knows that one. Guys, a really interesting stuff. And actually, it was very interesting listening rather than talking. I'm going to, if it's okay, we've had a request for someone to join, Tony G, and I'm going to invite Tony in, which I think makes this our first ever phone-in pod, which we have never done in 15 years. So let's see what happens. All right, I'll be Robbie Savage. You be Chris Coleman. Chris Coleman? Chris Sutton.
Chris Coleman. I will not be Chris Coleman.
You be Simon Jordan.
I don't have the melancholy to be Chris Sutton either. So I'll try and play best. But yeah, let's do it. Let's get Tony involved.
Okay. Well, Tony, are you there? Oh, he's muted himself. Tony, unmute yourself. That's the sort of thing I do. Connecting. Here we go. Well, the technology, yet again, is man of the match today. There we go. Well, Tony's connecting, so we'll see what happens. Joe, if I could, really quickly, one of the other tweets that we had was, Luke Cooper, who I think when I started saying, at the start of the pod, saying what's next, saying the Wilf situation is next. I know you both sort of just touched on the Wilf thing. The four clubs that Jack referenced, which is a report on Sky that he's accepted deals from four clubs. Have you seen this, Joe, or would you like to guess who the four clubs are?
I have seen it. It's four agreements in principle. I think it was Lazio, Fenerbahce, and Al Nassr. Or Al Nassr, sorry, which is...
Is that Cristiano Ronaldo's club?
Yes. And so the suggestion is...
Are we the fourth then?
He's kind of told them, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
We're the fourth, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and I think the suggestion is he's gone, or his agent has said, yep, sounds good to us, we'll be back to you in a week, and has done it to everybody. I was saying earlier, it reminded me, about 10 years ago, I was working in music, and... this kid from Croydon called Stormzy was really exciting. And I was like, right, let's talk to his manager. And there were about five people running around claiming that they're his manager. None of them knew each other. None of them have ever met. But Stormzy was going, if you can get me my... basically saying to anyone that was offering, if you can get me a record deal or whatever, if you can get me this, that and that, yeah, you can be both. Yeah. I'm quite happy to let all these people running around do the work for me and claim that I'm theirs, as if they bring back anything good to see what happens. And I feel like that's how this looks at, really. I think he's shopping around, keeping everyone on a string until he makes up his mind, really. It strikes me that, then maybe he's kind of hoping for a better offer still from somewhere. Mm. I feel like Palace's position strengthens the more time passes, really. Whether or not we are patient enough to hold on, or withdraw that offer after a certain amount of time, I find that's probably the most interesting question.
I have to say... I had the fortune of bumping into Wilf last week at Ibiza Airport, and Nice. Very nice. Very nice.
You weren't on the stag do, mate.
No, I was not on his stag do. I'm not Danny the Kitman. I did say hello to Danny the Kitman as well, Danny the no longer Kitman. But Wilf was very relaxed. That may be because he was desperate to go home the last day of his stag do, but he doesn't strike me as a man with the weight of a massive decision on his shoulders. And you know, hopefully that decision comes sooner rather than later, but he certainly seems okay and comfortable in himself if he's, you know, willing to wait to make such a massive decision. And, you know, he certainly was a man on the flight home from his stag do, and he was polite enough, but I think he would have rather gone under the radar, and he didn't have too much to say. But I did meet, two-thirds of AFC Croydon's new ownership. Stormzy must have been hiding somewhere, but...
He gets private jets.
Well, surprise. Well, Will, man of the people, let's put it that way. Yeah, very nice. Congratulations to him. He's living his best life at the moment. And dare I say, he's probably frequenting another airport as we speak before he goes on his honeymoon. So he's taking his time. How long can we wait, though? When would Steve Parish be pushing that dial and asking him to make a decision? That while it's a decision that he can make at his own time, there is an impact for Palace, and you know, it's a significant amount of money that we are putting aside for him. And if it's not to be allocated to him, then we need to be spending it elsewhere to improve the squad. So I do wonder what that deadline will be. I have absolutely no idea, but you think maybe another couple of weeks maximum?
Yeah, because you think if you're... I know former footballers who their game in the summer, if they were a free agent, would be to kind of wait it out, avoid the kind of really awful bits of pre-season, and then wait till deadline, close to deadline as possible, or even after deadline day, if they've got the kind of, if they can hold out, you know, if they're resolved strong enough, and just see increasing desperation of clubs to really, you know, as the trolley dashes and all the merry-go-round begins, they can almost get a better deal and avoid all the stresses of pre-season by kind of waiting to see all the cards fall with various targets. And they, so Wilf might have a situation where he's going, I'm kind of hoping PSG's plans fall apart. And if I'm still there ready and waiting with my passport on, you know, August the 4th, maybe, you
I'm ready
know,
to go.
I mean, I'm quite doing. But it's, I don't, I, something tells me we would wait around as long as possible, but we probably shouldn't.
Loss.
I was going to say that. I don't think there's a deadline from Palace. I think they would, given it's Wilf. Probably, I think the ball's in Wilf's court. I think, and I think he holds all the cards.
It's going to be that guy who's waiting for the club lights to turn on at the end of the night. It's a bit desperate, but fair enough. You have my sympathy, Crystal Palace Football Club.
I've been there many times. And I didn't go back with 200 grand to Crystal Palace. But looking at the teams, though, with all due respect to those teams, and I don't want to be that fan on that podcast, but like, I think if you know you've got a 200 grand a week, as reported, deal from Palace on the table, or Lazio, Fenerbahce and El Nasser, given that leaving Palace was supposed to be about European football and Champions League and big trophies and stuff, you'd look at that, sure, if that's the best that whoever's around him can come up with, sure, you'd think, what's the point?
And only one of them offers Champions League.
Absolutely.
Football.
Yeah.
Fenerbahce are... I've tried to work it out. They're only eligible. They're in Conference League this season, but they finished sort of top two, top three in Turkey last season. So I don't really understand whether that's like some sort of ban or
Turkish coefficient has never been lower.
Right, I guess so. Well, I mean, look at the top scorers in Turkey. Put it this way, Yanni Belazzi's in the second tier of Turkey and scored like 15, 20 league goals. Probably got about four goals in as many years for Palace. Most of them in one game. And I feel like that would be a huge club to play for, Fenerbahce. Atmosphere, rabid. I mean, anyone following on social media would have noticed that their fans are absolutely inescapable on anything Wolf. I don't know if you guys remember this, but
the BBS for years was this billed as like the best, the biggest English club fans forum on the internet. And they couldn't say the world. They were second in the world, but Fenerbahce were like tenfold in terms of their kind of their size of their message boards online. And it's just, they just seem to be everywhere, all over the kind of anything that mentions Zaha. And I imagine playing for them must be really exciting, but equally a nightmare when it's not going well. So that I can understand the lure of playing in there, but if his objective is Champions League football, the only offer there is Lazio, who aren't the most pleasant club, I suppose.
The idea of him playing for Lazio is something else, to be honest.
Yeah.
For a man who has stood for everything that he stood for in the last few years, well, all of his career, if he ends up playing for...
They're not the most pleasant people, are they? So that leaves you with... Although it is Champions League football, if you try and just narrow the focus to football, it's Maurizio Sarri, it's, you know, some really exciting stuff, and he'd have a great time playing on there, I imagine. Al Nassr, does he get romantic and think about playing with Ronaldo? Is that worth it enough, or do you want to just get that same money being at home with your family where you have been for the last 10 years?
I mean,
would you want to uproot for the same money?
If you follow the odds, Palace are still the most likely destination for him to be at the start of next season, and you know, the odds are pretty good, could guide in terms of where he might end up. But PSG are still very highly offered as well, offer, you know, decent value. So I don't know. I still think that.
Do you think you're a fan, you know, Mr. Football Cliches, Jackie, do you think that leak to Sky was a huge come and get me plea?
I think Herve Zaha might be running out of pages in his playbook, possibly. The other thing to say with Sky Sports, they aren't often the leading, they're not leading breaking news very often in the kind of the modern football game, so it might be Sky Sports themselves trying to kind of get ahead of the game and kind of create the story and let others follow, because, you know, in the era of Fabrizio Romano, it's not very often Carve Solicull who's leading the kind of the press anymore. So Dartmouth Chef will have his day once again someday, but I don't know if it's going to be Wilfred Zaha. Exactly.
Oh, that reminds me. I googled Lance Cronin earlier, and
what's he
is he still playing?
Stopped playing in 2015.
Oh no, Lance!
And that was at Whitehawk, which would be proper non-league.
Yeah.
In 2012, he set up a paint and property maintenance company called Repainted. So,
Lance,
and is this a sponsor?
Jim, Lance, if you're
Jim would be willing to have a conversation, Lance.
definitely. Do you think as well that Fenerbahce fans sing largest online football fan forum in the world, you're never seeing that? Because that's definitely...
They've got nothing else to celebrate at the moment, so...
I just think, listening to you guys talk, I just think 31-year-old Will, because he'd be 31 in a couple of months, with a young family, just married, are you? And we know he's a London boy, close to his family. Are you really moving to Rome or to Turkey or Saudi?
I think Rome is quite appealing. I think all of that's quite appealing, given the lifestyle he'd be able to lead wherever he wants to be. It's not necessarily. I do think the lure of staying in London is a great one for him, and you know, clearly he holds family and their happiness close to his decision making. So I do think, you know, this
4-year deal as well, it's quite something.
It's a lot. I mean, Jim, he is famously 30 until he is 31, so therefore this deal would run until he's 34, not 35. So I think it's an amazing offer that he's kind of cultivated from the club, and he's played a gamble to leave it this late, and the club have come to the table with what sounds like a very, very attractive offer. But yeah, I mean, we'll talk more Wilf over the next few weeks, but we'll hear sooner rather than later. I hope it's sooner rather than later, because, you know, as much as we all love Wilfred Zaha, he is not bigger than the club, and our fortunes on the pitch will be dictated one way or the other by whichever way we find ourselves with Wilf. You know, that decision needs to be made so we can kind of look after ourselves. Either we secure the services of our greatest ever player, or were able to use significant resource that we were allocating in his direction for the benefit of kind of the wider playing squad. So,
do you think, given what we saw a couple of years ago when Wilf signed that 5-year deal and there was a picture of him on the yacht with Steve, that when Wilf's on his honeymoon, he'll be looking over his shoulder and there might be Steve popping up in the hotel spa in the swimming pool?
I have not.
Trying to slip a brown paper bag towards him.
Laminated contract.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
on a serious point, as well as the wedding, which I imagine we would have given, him some room for, and Stag, I guess. I just remembered one of his brothers passed away in the last sort of week to 10 days as well. Yeah. Which, if you look on Instagram, I believe that's his profile picture. So you could imagine a Steve Parrish. I think most of us would kind of go, do you know what? We'll ring you in a couple of weeks. Yeah. If you need anything, we're here, but we're not gonna be hammering your phone.
100%.
Really feel like
100%, Joe.
So yeah, maybe that factors in. There's still plenty of surprises as to where his head's at. You know,
I think that's completely fair. Completely fair. And I think actually we should probably wrap up this Twitter Space part two. We're going to put it out as a podcast as well. So if you're listening on the pod, thanks for listening. Just really quickly to wrap up, one of the FYP team has said that Lance Cronin tried to sell him Herbalife. So
nice.
Good luck to you, Lance, wherever you are. That's it. Thanks for coming on for this part two. And thank you to everyone, our panellists from part one as well. Good to get everyone's reaction. I think everyone's feeling pretty okay at the moment. But as we said, lots of things to be worked out next few weeks over the summer. And then in 2 weeks' time, I think Palace back in action against Barnet in their first pre-season friendly.
Oh, can't wait for the meltdown. Oh, 6-2 at Barnet or something. Fantastic.
That meltdown's just 2 weeks away, mate. Not long to go.
Bring it on.
Right, we're back again soon, so keep an eye on your feed for more episodes. Until then, take care, everyone. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again soon. Bye-bye.
See you, everyone.
Sports Social Podcast Network.